For the week of December 4th, 2013, we talk about Journey's Grammy nomination, Hotline Miami, and the perfect banana slicer. This is The Seventh Level. This is level 7 of our program, The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. My name is Cole Ross, and I am your host, and I am joined via Skype tonight by the usual crew. Roll call, fellas.
Dennis Furia.
David Moneysmith.
Ben Merkel.
And I am so happy to have you here. Happy New Year, fellas. It is New Year's Day as we record this, a couple days after this as you're hearing this, but the sentiment remains the same. There is a feeling of false new beginnings in the air as people try in vain to improve their lives and themselves, and then they fall back into their usual habits.
They've probably screwed it up already. So we shouldn't rub it in.
Thank you. You
they made it the first few days, but... Not four or five.
All the way to Friday.
You know what? That's admirable. Baby steps. You know, over the course of several years of your life, eventually if you make it to, you know, to January 2nd, 3rd, then 4th, eventually you get there. And if you live 365 years, you will get to that point where you can be your best self all year round. However, there are always video games nipping at your heels. So the level.
As opposed to demon dogs.
Is it demon dogs or devil dogs?
It's interchangeable. We explored this on Those Damn Ross Kids this week. It is a line that is borrowed from Roderick on the Line, which is a podcast that anybody listening to this should go listen to, because it has Merlin Mann, an internet celebrity who is a favorite of mine, and also John Roderick of the Long Winters, and they talk about World War II alien conspiracies and how to live the life that you can best live. Super Train, which is a train that goes around recycling people into carbon, and also Devil Dogs. So pod plugs, also The Pitch and Watch Out for Fireballs and Bonfire Side Chat. Are you guys happy now?
Yeah, and that made me pretty happy right there.
Okay,
there's some new names on there. Do you want to? I don't know if we'll do it later. Do you want to do any explaining about the new names in that whole repertoire?
Yeah. So the new year brings new programs. If you are fond of Watch Out for Fireballs, you can listen to that show, and also buy the app on either Android or iOS, and you can get a new program that we're doing every 2 weeks called Abject Suffering, which is think like Angry Video Game Nerd or something like that, where the community suggests new bad games for us to play, and then we play them. And then I need to like put this bell away because I try and dismantle it. So yeah, that is something that for the near future will remain exclusive to people who buy the app. It is $2, etc. Bonfireside Chat. If you are fucking sick and tired of me talking about Dark Souls on every show that I ever do, hooray for you, because this is a new show that is dedicated entirely to that particular game, and it's going to be starting on January 16th. So check your local listings, as it were. Brief.
Sweet.
Yeah, let's do this thing. Does anybody have a story that they want to volunteer? Otherwise, I will go first.
I do have one.
Okay, Dennis, go.
Yes. So I'll take this. I'll go first because I have a feeling that maybe Cole might have the same story. But the Walking Dead Survival Instinct has many new details revealed for it, which is the first-person shooter set in the Walking Dead universe.
That's the Activision one, right?
It's being developed by Terminal Reality. Let's see. I don't know if Activision is publishing it. I mean, there's like a 50-50 chance that they are, right? So, but it's a first-person shooter. They've been very clear, though, in talking about the game, that they don't want to make this a Call of Duty with the Walking Dead title. You know, I haven't experienced the franchise, so maybe Cole, this will mean something to you, but they said that we want to be sure that three walkers will still scare you.
Yeah. Walkers are just their name for the dead, because, and this has been true for a while now, you can't call them zombies, although that's effectively what they are. So they don't want to make it so, like, you know, in Call of Duty, like, yeah, three dudes with guns will pose a threat to you. but really you just kind of like snap zoomed all of them and then just shoot them down. They want to make this so that, like, yes, they can outnumber you, but outnumbering means me plus one or more. Yeah.
Seems a little unrealistic.
Does it?
Yeah.
What about zombies strikes you as unrealistic?
Well, I just mean, you know, these aren't rage zombies. They're like the slow moving ones, right?
Walkers can be pretty quick if they want to be.
What? So I missed the point.
You could easily drop three. I don't know.
Why do they call them walkers as opposed to zombies?
Walkers because, like, oh, the dead are walking.
Okay.
And zombies, it's like the second that you refer to something as a zombie in popular media, it immediately becomes, oh, it's that zombie game. So look at something like Left 4 Dead, where they're called the infected and not zombies. Or okay. Look at Resident Evil, where they're never really called zombies. They're, you know, they're BOWs.
Okay. I defy you to imagine any sort of world that has anything like a zombie in it that isn't just immediately labeled by the masses a zombie.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems like a pretty ubiquitous title for them.
It's a matter of external taxonomy versus internal taxonomy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, like, here's the thing. You look at, what is it, Shaun of the Dead. I forget if they call them zombies in that. But in order for the fiction to work and for people to be surprised, they have to not know that zombies are a thing.
Right. That's the only way they can be so stupid.
Right, right. So not know, like, okay, we just need to, like, lock ourselves up with enough food and water for them to, like, starve themselves out or shoot for the head or, you know, try not to get bitten, any of those kind of things. Walking Dead puts a damper on that a little bit, but I don't want to spoil anything for, like, what happens in the games or in the comic books or in the TV show, you know. But yeah, it assumes that the protagonists of that particular series are not genre savvy.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of the protagonists, you get to be Daryl Dixon, which is, I guess, a prominent figure in the series, and you'll have his brother there as well.
That's from the TV show, I think.
Yes. Yep. And you're gonna get some backstory on them. The other cool thing is that Terminal Reality has said that we want to put as much emphasis on choice or as much weight behind choice in this first-person shooter game as Telltale did with their kind of adventure game, which, you know, I don't know how much they'll be able to deliver on that. But they are definitely putting that kind of intention behind it and, you know, kind of forcing you to make hard choices as you play, which is cool.
That's cool. I mean, I don't want to be, like, skeptical. I haven't seen anything the studio has done. The only thing that would cause me to, you know, bring pause to that would be that, you know, the Walking Dead adventure games, that you have a lot of verbs at your disposal. You know, pick up, do, kill, smother, all those kind of things. Just the individual actions you can take versus in a first-person shooter, by definition, it is limited to, do you see thing? Yes. Then kill it? Yes. If no, you die. So I would like to see how they can manage that. You know.
Have you guys seen...
I didn't kill anything in Portal.
It's not really a first-person shooter, though. It's a first-person puzzle game.
It's a first-person shooter.
But you don't.
I shot.
You're in the first person, and you're shooting things. So technically, you are correct. Did you guys see? There's like a zombie romantic comedy out now.
Yeah. That had there was a trailer for that in The Hobbit, right?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I couldn't remember which of the movies I went to recently had it.
Yeah, where the zombies are revived back to human by love.
Yeah, really, this was an inevitability. So,
this is going to be completely hypocritical when we get to our what we've been playing thing. But I'm really tired of the zombie thing.
I agree.
Not that there's anything wrong with zombies. I mean, it's a good, you know, it's a good motif, but it's crossed the line to where it's people are doing it just because. as opposed to doing it because they wanted to have zombies in whatever story they're telling.
That line's way back there in the mist, David.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on the record as saying, sometimes between Left 4 Dead 1 and Left 4 Dead 2, things went entirely to shit. As regards zombies.
We just need our next thing. We'll get something. It was robots. Kind of vampires, but they got robots. Oh yeah, we've got the robots versus monsters one, right? So
fucking shit. We ruin everything we touch.
Wait, robots?
The Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that looks good.
It has GLaDOS. We shall see. Have fun.
It's directed by Guillermo del Toro, so that's like the hope for that movie, in my opinion. Yeah. But
that looks amazing.
Good directors can do bad things. For some reason, I want to say Ang Lee, however, I like the 2003 Hulk movie, and I don't think he's done anything really bad.
What about We Bought a Zoo by Cameron Crowe?
Oh yeah, fuck shit. It bums me out that like Cameron Crowe is the only director that Neil Young will give his music to, but that's just because I like Cameron Crowe's movies and I like Neil Young's music, and Cameron Crowe has been missing more than he hits recently. So, anyway.
Was that the Hulk movie where
Eric Bana,
Tyler discovers that after Fight Club he can. You know, become the Incredible Hulk or something.
No, that was 2008. Yeah, that was 2008 with Edward Norton. Yeah, and William Hurt.
That was fairly
actually.
Good.
Yeah, no, that was an okay movie. It was okay plus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So
is that the one where he fights the dogs?
Yep. No,
that's the Eric Bana one. So.
Yes. Gotcha. So who has another brief story that they want to say? I have one. I can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, so Australia has been known for being kind of the backwater of video games. Not only does every game cost twice as much as it does here in the States because of shipping and stuff. You know, turns out when you have to, you know, mail something and put it on a boat across an entire ocean, it tends to be more expensive. However, politically, they are pretty uptight as regards mature content. The biggest thing was their highest rating for several years was MA 15+, which was equivalent to our teen rating here in the States. However, our teen rating is enforced by the ESRB and not the actual government, whereas their ratings are enforced by the government. However, just here recently, as of the January the 1st, today, when we were recording this, of 2013, Australia has put out its... R18+ rating, which means that games like Left 4 Dead or Grand Theft Auto or any of those kind of things, which would be considered mature here in our territory, can actually be put out. Because before, if it was above 15+, it had to be banned by its local retailers. So says South Australia's Attorney General John Rao, we've actually achieved a good balance where, in effect, MA 15+ has become more restrictive, and games that previously would have been in MA 15+ are now going to be sitting in R18+. It's a win for gamers who wanted to have the opportunity as adults to purchase these games, but it's also a win for parents because they can be more confident that games that are an age appropriate will not be available to people under 18. So that is considered to be a huge win for the gaming industry and for gamers in Australia, because they will no longer have to resort to importers to get these games that would have been deemed by their government to be too racy for them.
Well, I want to say like good for them and be excited for them, but it's like a friend running up and being like, dude, I just upgraded to the automobile. It's a horseless carriage. It's amazing.
You have to crank it, but it's okay, I guess. Yeah.
It's like, good. That's good for you. Excellent. Good job. Welcome to the century. It's good.
Yeah.
The rating system in general, though, it's just so dumb. It just doesn't mean anything.
No, I mean, I like how it is here, and this may be at odds with my general position as just the raging liberal that I am. But I like that it is something that is self-regulated by the publishers and also the people who sell the games. And I like that it is something that is left to the parents.
But I guess what I'm saying, though, is like over here, mature rating doesn't mean anything.
Oh, fuck no. I was playing I was playing Mortal Kombat at age 7, dude.
It basically includes any game that is good that isn't made by Nintendo, basically. I guess the problem is they don't separate between like a game that, you know, has some violent stuff like that, but it's, you know, basically a decent game, and like, you know, Slaughter and Sex Fest 5000. You know, both get a mature, you know.
Yeah. I would also say it covers, you know, the mature rating covers everything from Halo Combat Evolved to Silent Hill 2, which if you look at actual maturity level, one has a little bit of blood spatter for aliens, whereas the other is dealing with themes of rape and repressed memories and all this stuff. So,
yeah.
However, those are pretty latent, you know, like those are not in your face and gratuitous, you know.
But like nothing stops you if we're going towards like themes and things like that, nothing stops you from going to the library and getting, you know, Lady Chatterley's Lover, because I'm apparently somebody who lives in 1850. you know,
yeah, but I mean, that's not rated. One thing is there's no point in having the rating because it doesn't really mean anything.
Are you saying that within the mature ratings, it's too broad of a field and it should be perhaps more specific of a rating? Or
I think, yeah. And the other thing is, I don't know, I feel like there's a difference between a game that is mature rated truly by definition because it is, you know, more mature versus a game that's mature rated because it's just gratuitous drug, sex, and violence. And, you know, it's like the difference between Saving Private Ryan and Cranked.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that movie in so long. Both are rated R. One has redeeming value, and you know, Crank, the other doesn't. I've actually never seen Saving Private Ryan. I've been told it's decent.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Has been Diesel in it.
I don't know. Not as good as Shakespeare in Love, according to the Academy. But
do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I know what you're saying. And I can understand where you're coming from. And I'm never the person to argue for the status quo. And the ESRB has been the status quo here in the States for, you know, let us say 20 years now, because the Mortal Kombat trials were in like 1993. And this is 2013, if you didn't know that. That's crazy. I can't think of that. That's weird.
This is the first year since 1987 to have four different digits. Huh. Yeah, just chew on that for a little bit.
I will. I'm going to go rock in the tub and cry. I will say, as somebody who has worked in video game retail for 8 years, that the ESRB tends to work in that if a punk kid wants to come up and buy Grand Theft Auto, which is the perennial favorite for using an example on this stuff, you can say no, and it's great. And if the parent comes up and wants to get it, either, you know, they never come back, or a lot of the times they'll come back and say, why did you sell this filth to me? Well, you kind of gave permission. Yeah, I mean, it's really particular. It's really kind of touchy, and I, you know, it's weird, because when I was under 18, I had a lot of investment in this because I was like, I can make my own decisions because I am an adult and I am an informed consumer. But as we discussed a couple of episodes ago, all of us here are well-adjusted people. and we turned out no worse for the wear of some of the objectionable stuff that we were exposed to. You know, as I am growing up, and though I don't have children of my own, I have, you know, a 13-year-old younger sister, and I have a 7-year-old niece, both of whom I love dearly. And just kind of like, would I want them playing, you know, Grand Theft Auto or Resident Evil or something like that? Maybe, maybe not, you know, unless they prove to be, you know, stable enough to, you know, not be like, I love blood. Blood is my favorite thing in the world.
So what you're saying is you're not sure yet if your niece is a psychopath or not.
You know, it's weird because that doesn't sort itself out until like the mid-20s. Like... People can turn in their mid in their early to mid 20s as we're discovering. So it's just like it's just one of those things that as you gain this, you know, perspective on like, yeah, I really wouldn't want them exposed to that kind of stuff. You can understand the other side of the other side of you, and you really respect the ability of parents to make those decisions. And my parents decided, hey, he can have Silent Hill 2 when he is 14 years old, or he can have Mortal Kombat when he is 7 years old, things like that, because, you know, parents know their kids and they should be able to make those decisions. The government, maybe, maybe not. Who knows?
Word.
Very cool.
Word. So who has a brief?
I got a brief, and it's going to be a brief.
Cool.
So this is one thing that's kind of an old bit of news, but I just found it out today. So I just wanted to share it. So the Grammys are coming up in about a month or so.
Yes, they are.
They're February 10th. I did not know this, but one of the categories for the Grammys is best. Let me read it exactly. Best score soundtrack for visual media, and typically it's the best soundtrack for a film. And so four of the entries are The Artist, The Dark Knight Rises, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, The Adventures of Tintin. There, so the five entries, but the sixth one, not a movie, is Journey.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And apparently this is the first video game soundtrack that's been nominated for a Grammy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also something that I did not know until today. So I thought I would share that.
No, that's fantastic. If you haven't gone and grabbed the Journey soundtrack, it's on iTunes for like $8, I think. It's really good. And I can see that because the music in that game is incredibly important to the story. So good on the Academy, or good on, I guess, the Grammy body or whatever they are.
I'd like to thank the Grammy hive mind.
Yes.
I'd like to thank Grammy for this award. Grammy, thank you, Grammy. I'll be over to your house for muffins later.
Thank you, Mom. No, that's cool. That's good.
Am I the only one who thought that Rin Tin Tin, like, big time Uncanny Valley?
I think you, like, Rin Tin Tin is a dog.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Tintin is Tin Tin. The French comic.
Rin Tin Tin. That was, like, that was old.
I'd forgotten that Hugo and Tintin or Tauntaun or whatever it was, was this year.
The Adventures of Tauntaun.
Lightsaber at the end.
You thought it smelled bad on the outside. Do-do, do-do, 2013. Do-do, do-do. Rated MA. Yeah, no, it's that was more late last year, but the seasons are weird on the Oscars. So
the Grammys?
Either of those things, really. It's they all operate by their own rules.
The Oscars seem to make sense, though. It's just whatever comes out in that year, you know, like that numerical year.
Yeah, that's why everybody like rushes to get stuff out in the
December.
Yeah.
I feel like you need time to realize if something. Sorry, we talked about this last time, didn't we? To realize if something's really good or not.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both with games and movies.
Yeah, because you might really have a good opinion of something until the next big thing comes out.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, it's... I feel like what's... Especially if... particularly if you're talking about something that's supposed to be meaningful or whatever, I feel like what's meaningful is the media that you think about a couple months later still. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like what leaves a mark on you.
Right.
David, do you have a brief?
Yeah, did you see the whole thing with the, was it the War Z on Steam?
Yeah, they didn't have the, so Steam released it early, and then it turns out the publisher got sued because their trademark infringed on War Z, or World War Z, from Max Brooks.
Well, that was part of it, but the other issue with it was... the game, there were a whole bunch of features that the game claimed it had that simply didn't.
Huh.
Apparently it was described as the overall quality being of about alpha quality. Hmm. And the weird thing is, you know, then the publisher's response to it was just crazy. So, for example, it claimed that, it would have up to 100 zombies on a map. The publisher, when called on that, claimed that, well, up to 100 meant any number, you know.
Between 0 and 100?
Yeah.
Pretty... Well, yeah, or negative zombies, where it took zombies from other games.
Didn't put them on their screen or anything, just eliminated zombies from other games.
Yeah. they instituted, you know, it has kind of this pseudo permadeath where once you die, that character is like locked out for an hour.
Okay.
And excuse me. And they increased it to like 4 hours, but then now you can pay and revive instantly.
So like
this
a
is a
pay kind of
to
model.
Pay to play.
Yeah, it was a, and that's the other thing is it's straight up freemium, but if you read the description, it was, you know, no upcharging, you know, no subscription, no basically set up like it wasn't pay to play. So ultimately, Steam took it off after they got complaints, took it off of it. And I guess Steam is paying to give people refunds.
Huh. Yeah.
That's actually, I mean, well, obviously not really cool on the part of the developer. That's really cool on the part of Steam.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Steam is acting as a publisher or a distributor. So they're kind of like GameStop in this case. We're like, yeah, we sold this game without really knowing.
No, that is true.
Yeah, I'm looking at their Wikipedia page. Under the controversy section, it says, in October 2012, executive producer Sergei Titov referred to spawn campers in the War Z as faggots in a forum post. And I immediately lost all sympathy because fuck that dude for saying that.
Yeah, we got a real high-class guy here.
Yeah.
So is the rating of this game up to 10 out of 10?
Good one, Ben. Thank you.
It made my day.
It's one of those things where, like, just there's so many levels of assery. You know, just the fact that it was blatantly a ripoff of what was that mod?
Daisy.
Like, I almost bought the game, assuming I just assumed that it was, you know, the popular thing now is make a really good mod and then start working, then make, you know, a, you know, independent release. You know, that's what Killing Floor, Natural Selection, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, I would feel more bad for him if, you know, the game was at all original.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... I think I saw the issue was they had already released one game that was a legitimate game, so they didn't have to. They were already greenlighted through like Steam's quality control stuff, so they didn't have to submit the game to quality control.
Mm.
Which is understandable because I suppose, you know, Steam can't, you know, check every game they put on, I suppose.
Isn't that what Project Greenlight is for, though? Like, to make sure that the fans can check stuff?
Yeah, I'm not. Maybe it's Project Greenlight that they didn't have to go through.
Oh, so that they got in before that. That makes sense. So
maybe it's because they already released one. I don't know.
So it was acceptable for game devs to call their clients, their customers, faggots. Dude, fuck this dude. Really?
Ugh. Well, he got what's coming to him, right?
Yeah, for real. Wow. Yeah, nobody buy this game. If I hear that anybody has bought this game who listens to the show, stop.
I mean, we try to alienate everyone already, but this time for real.
This time for real. Don't do that. That's fucking lame.
Unless, of course, you bought it on accident, because, I mean, like David said, they kind of are trading on the fact that people are just like, oh, that must be a good thing.
Yeah, if you're tricked, you know, that's fine. But, lots of zombie angst in this episode.
So did you write down Assery for a possible show name, by the way?
Maybe. Let me do that. The Grind. So it's The Grind, where we talk about games that we have been playing. And I'm interested to hear what you fellas have been playing. If nobody wants to volunteer, I will do mine, which are very small and very short.
Do your thing.
Okay.
Do you want me to do that?
Yes, that was it.
Do it, please.
That was the consensus. Okay. First off, Hotline Miami, it is a really good game. And if you have $10, I would recommend you go get it. It's difficult. This is something I've said before, and I've talked about it before, so I will not belabor the point. It definitely, the key mechanic in this game, where you are given hints over a telephone line about places where you can go and kill Russian mobsters in Miami in 1989. The key mechanic in this game, I'm finding out, is deciding what order to kill people in.
Same war.
Okay, so
that sounds really morbid.
It is, and it's meant to make you feel bad about the things that you're doing, as evidenced by the fact that, like, if you kill somebody with a weapon that isn't decidedly fatal, so if you're using a baseball bat or a golf club, most of the time you will, like, knock somebody clean off, and, you know, blood will spatter, and when you see blood, they're dead. Sometimes they will start crawling around, and they can't hurt you, but you can't get your points until you kill them. So you have to walk up to their bodies and then press the space bar, and then you slit their throats in order to get your points. It's really, really uncomfortable.
It's like Blood Simple, if anyone's seen that movie.
Oh, I need to make a note of that. What is that?
Coen Brothers' first movie.
I am surprised I haven't seen that, given how much I love Coen Brothers' movies.
Is this intentionally so? Like, this is the developer's intent?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for the game?
No, mm-hmm. No, I've just played the game. Can you illuminate us on the trailer?
I love the trailer for it.
What happens in it?
It's basically live action, like this guy, you know, with just this completely, you know, dead look on his face, you know, pulls up to this, broken down apartment building. He goes in, he's got like the baseball bat and like rubber mask. Mm-hmm. And the trailer is just, you know, he gets in the elevator and it just keeps opening at these various floors. And each one, he's, you know, more covered in blood and like his clothes are more torn and stuff like that. And that's basically the trailer.
Yeah, and that's very realistic to the game experience, actually, because, you know, each level unlocks a different kind of animal mask. Some of them give you different abilities. The most recent one that worked really well for me, I forget what the name was. Each of them has a name, but it made doors lethal. Which meant that, like, if somebody was walking by a door and you slammed it open, it would kill them. Which really rewards, like, both stealth gameplay, like making a decision about when to burst into a situation, and also being incredibly reckless, because, you know, if you slam open a door, people will notice in that room, you know, when you come through. So you can sneak through and be okay, but if you, like, slam open and then just, like, run up to the nearest person as quick as possible, and even if you have, like, fists out, you can knock them down. And then, like, knock everybody down and then press the space bar to, like, slam them against the floor until all the blood comes out their head.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is why Australia does not import mature games.
That's fine. I linked the trailer.
Oh, cool. But yeah, no, it's definitely meant to make you feel as uncomfortable as possible about the things that you're doing. You know, and that goes right from like the presentation of the game, which is as repugnant as possible, with the colors being all weird and the crazy, like shifting, you know, like 15 degrees to the left and to the right, pixel art, and things like that. And from what I understand, like later on, it becomes about like, are you having fun killing these people?
Ugh.
You know,
I'm very interested. I haven't played it, so you can tell me if maybe it does this. I feel like games are starting to, you know, kind of be able to create this kind of dissonance in like, you know, fun is not the only mechanic that we have at our disposal anymore. A game can be engaging while being decidedly not fun. Like, you're not having fun. At least I hope you wouldn't call it fun while you're doing these things, but you're still engaged. You're still thinking. It's still an experience worth having. I'd be curious to see where games go in terms of once you feel that way, allowing you to act on it instead of just like, okay, I have this dissonance and that's the point. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's statement games, right? Or serious games, things like that. Spec Ops, although I haven't played it, I understand that that is the main point of that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that speaks to the sophistication. And it goes back to verbs. Like, you know, if a game's only verbs, like in this case, Hotline, it's like, okay, you can punch a dude to death, or you can shoot him, or cut him with a katana, or, you know, rip his throat open with a broken bottle or a knife or something like that. This is all the game lets you do, but it still chastises you for doing it and for getting really, really good at doing it over trial and error, right? So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that emotional dissonance is definitely something the games are adding to their, you know, to their palette, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll be interested to see what happens when a game can both make you feel like, I don't want to be doing this, and then actually let you decide not to pull the trigger and have that be as interesting or engaging as pulling the trigger.
Play The Walking Dead, dude, man. Play The Walking Dead.
I was going to say, play Hitman Absolution. There's a level where they let you do that as well.
Yeah. Really?
Nice. I feel like the problem is, though, games... I feel like the issue is... You know, in order to do that, you'd need to present the positives and negatives of both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, like the negative of that side is you cannot wait until you kill everybody in this room, and it befits you to kill everybody as brutally as possible.
Well, I guess what I mean is, you know, right now games generally fall into two camps, either. You know, you do violent stuff and they show the good results. You know, you save people, you know, you save the world, whatever, you're the hero. Or you do violent stuff and they show the negative results. You know, Spec Ops, this, stuff like that. I feel like what they really need to do is, you know, it's not one or the other.
Right.
A police officer that, you know, kills a criminal to save someone's life, but they also killed someone's kid. You know, it's not just, you know, positive or negative.
Yeah. It's real tough, especially when you start trying to take a moral stand. It's not going to please everybody.
I guess that's what I'm saying, though. That's the problem, is they shouldn't take a moral stand. They should present the good side of it and the bad side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, you know, war versus pacifism. Yeah. You know, the good side of war is that, you know, you get rid of a dictator. The bad side is civilian casualties, people die. The good side of pacifism is that you don't kill people. The bad side is the dictator stays in power. And what I think games should do is present both the good side and bad side, both, and say you decide which, you know, which is right.
And like the weird thing about this game is like, even though like before I hopped on to record this, I had just finished chapter 5 out of 15. And you know, the majority of the people that you're fighting in this game, they are Russian mobsters in white suits. Right. So the implicit narrative is that they deserve what they get. And because this happens in the first third of the game or so, I don't feel bad about saying this, but like, you know, in some of the missions, like you find like this woman who is like sobbing in a bathroom. And when you kill everybody, you know, who's a bad guy in this level, you escort her out. And then you like you put her up in your apartment that serves as your home base for the game. So it does prevent both sides of that, but there's still like the repugnant aspect of the things that it's asking you to do, however abstracted they are. However, right. Like it's me pressing a space bar and seeing some pixels occur on the screen. And it's kind of like, oh, he's like crawling and begging for his life, but in order to proceed, I need to like kill him. And you know, there's a strong overtone or undertone of like psychosis in this game, that this person is just completely off his fucking rocker. And, you know, it makes you feel uncomfortable about being the person who pulls the trigger in this case, or, you know, sure. Swings the crowbar or the katana.
or any one of those many verbs.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, would I recommend that you play this? Yeah. I mean, there's some goofy stuff. Like, there are puzzles in the game that require you to shoot doors that have explosives rigged to them, but they won't explode if you don't have the right weapon. And if you try to open them and you don't know that, they'll explode and kill you. And you just, there's like a bunch of weird stuff like that. So there's that kind of thing, and it's not that great in those regards, but I would say that as an exploration of these things we've talked about over the past 5 minutes or so, it's really, really good in that regard. So go for it, I would say.
Very cool.
The other thing, it's been real weird because I've been home for these past couple weeks and not really been able to like play games, you know, that much. You know, Ben sent me, got me for Christmas, the Hitman game. I haven't been able to touch that. I'm so sorry, Ben, but that is next on my list, as it were. But, you know, you always have your computer, and when you have your computer, you have the Binding of Isaac, and that has served me well as I've been able to dive into a game for, you know, 5, 10, or 20 minutes at a time. And that's still really good. I'm not sure how much it costs. I think it's like $5 to get the whole thing. That serves you really well as like an action roguelike game. With a bunch of like crazy items that you don't know what they do, but you know they help you, maybe.
And maybe.
And kind of like Dark Souls, it's one of those games that as you play it more, you get better at playing the game. Even if your benefits or your perks or your equipment or things like that don't get better, because you lose everything when you die, you get better at playing the game and knowing these enemies. And it's really, really fucking good, and I would recommend you play it.
You know, I looked it up on Steam because I can do that now, and the trailer for that game is really just weird and eerie. Like, yeah. It's almost, you want to think that it's like kind of tongue-in-cheek funny too, and it probably is, but there's just a very, it's very almost disturbing to watch, which, you know, there's nothing graphic about it. It's just some, you know, it's mostly dark blurs moving around and implying monsters, etc. But it was just anyone who's interested in that game or has played that game and enjoyed it, etc. Check it out, just because it's interesting to see the way the game presents itself.
Yeah, I mean, like the monsters always present themselves, and there are different monsters for every dungeon that you encounter. And you
they're not live action these... when they do it, are they?
No, it's all flash art, and it's
okay,
all
the. The trailer is live action.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's presented in the same way that like The Legend of Zelda, like the original, is, in that there are keys and it's top down and, you know, all those kind of things. Yeah, that's good.
Cool.
So that's all I've been playing that I feel like, you know, qualified to like comment on. I've been playing Dark Souls, and I've been playing Parasite Eve, but you'll hear about those more later. So,
Cool. Sounds good.
You've also been playing Hanging Out with the Family, too, which is a important game to play.
Yes, it is, for your general health as a human being, both mental and physical. So,
nice PSA for the listeners.
Yes. Who wants to go next?
Human beings overrated. Come on.
Who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Cool.
All right. So I got two things, one of which I alluded to before. I don't know if it made it on the final cut or not. The first thing is I beat Hitman Absolution about a week and a half ago or so. I sent Cole a text as soon as I beat it, telling him how great it was. Overall, I was happy with it. It maintained its quality throughout the game. Hitman's kind of renowned for having strong endings to their games. And I won't say anything about the ending of the game, but I will say that I feel like perhaps Blood Money and Contracts had stronger endings than this one did. It wasn't a bad ending, but it was also, I don't know. I mean, still, every level you play is pretty quality. That said, after I beat the single player, they also have a contracts mode, which is their, I guess, multiplayer, or their attempt at multiplayer. And the way it works is it basically opens up an editor to all the levels that they have in the single player. And the way it works is, I will go to a level that I want to make a contract for, and you can, when you go into the level, you can target almost anyone on the level. Some levels have crowds, and you can't typically target any of the people in the crowd, but you can target like police officers or cooks or anybody who has a I guess icon on the radar, and you can then put out a contract on them. So whatever sort of scenario you want to create, you have to do yourself, which is kind of a nice quality control. You can't make impossible hits, I guess. But you can choose the difficulty, and then you have to go through the level and perform the hit however you want. So you get to pick the costume that he's wearing, and you can pick the weapon that he uses to kill the target with. And then you can post the level, you can post a description for it, kind of saying a hint as to what to do. And then people can play it themselves, and they can like it, dislike it, and it kind of filters out by quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so for example, it adds a nice level of replay value for it. So for example, I don't think we played the very first level. We did play the second level, the one where you're in a Chinatown market. And so I made a level with that where you can make the people wear whatever costumes you want. So I had a chipmunk costume that Hitman gets as a secret in one of the levels. So I made a level where he went through and killed three different cooks in a chipmunk costume. I think one with a fillet knife, one with a sniper rifle, and one with a silenced pistol. So
you made Hotel Miami.
Hotline Miami.
I was thinking more of chipmunk revenge or some sort of animal versus cook revenge scenario.
So it would have to take place in Appalachia, which is the only place where somebody would willingly kill and cook a chipmunk.
Actually, yeah. Where Chinatowns are prevalent too.
My boss eats squirrel, so that's the thing.
All right. I
learned something new today
about David's boss.
But even outside of the levels that I made, there are a lot of even better levels that other people make. So that's been a little bit of fun to dive into and see different takes on the level that you've already played.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I really like the idea of you have to beat the level that you create before you can move on. What game is it that Sound Shapes does that as well? And I think it's really smart just to maintain the overall quality of the stuff that comes out.
Yeah. And it makes you like your levels more because, you know, if it's challenging, you in fact mastered it yourself before you published it. So
yeah.
It's very nice.
It sounds like Infamous 2. Have any of you played that?
No, I've got it and I have not played it.
Yeah, that has a mode like where they give you the tools in game to make levels, And like when you are sitting on your map looking for missions, you can actually select, you can select to see ones that people have made and the ones that are rated high by the developers or by other players. They're raised towards the top. Mm-hmm. So that seems like a very Sony / any kind of like modern console game developer. Like, we're not going to give you the actual dev tools, but we're going to show you our environment where we have this stuff and give you the variables that you can change in order to make something and see if it rises to the top.
Yeah, kind of inspired by Little Big Planet, perhaps.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't they do that?
Little Big Planet, you can obviously create levels, but you cannot. You don't have to beat them before you play them, just because they wanted it to be so open ended that they weren't weren't necessarily expecting every level created to have an end. Right. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
The only way to win is not to play.
Yeah, basically.
The only way out is through.
I don't have equipped to match that.
No.
So you the only other
equipped. Sorry.
That was pretty good.
Oh, that's the best.
So, do you guys have any parting questions for the Hitman game? Because this will probably be the last week that I talk about it.
I just like any questions that I would have would ruin my own experience of playing
it. That's true. That's true.
Does it have any form of multiplayer other than the contracts mode?
No.
Okay.
So it has two modes. One's a suit. It's even like it's a pseudo multiplayer, but yeah.
Yeah. I would love to do that just to metagame for a bit as a discussion question at some point. Just talk about the relative merit of having a multiplayer mode, when it's a good thing, when it's a decidedly not good thing, etc.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an issue for developers because it divides their interests, Mm-hmm. They have to divide their team into two if they want to do that.
Unless they're Ubisoft, right? They can just bring in another studio to do their multiplayer for them.
Yeah. And it's my interest in doing that conversation at some point.
Yep. Ben, did you have any other games that you've been playing?
Yes, I had one other game that I started just tonight, which was Dark Souls, which is a game that Cole got for me. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of love on this podcast. But yeah, so I got I hate you. No, I got past the first boss, I guess, the one that has a gaping anus, I guess.
I don't remember any goatsy bosses in this thing, man.
This might have been a bit of a Rorschach boss here. Yeah.
The clue for it is like hit it in the back, and you got to do that. I don't know. It was just a weird animation.
Wait, which boss is this?
Yeah, I know.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The first one when you're leaving the asylum?
The big demon with the club?
Yeah.
Wait,
he's got a booty. He's got a booty, dude.
I don't remember any anuses, dude.
Well, all right, maybe I'm... Well, this might be a Freudian review then.
I'm Google imaging right now, and I'm a little confused.
Yeah, the asylum demon? Huh.
Wait, anyway. Isn't that the one you jump off and kill?
Well, you can take a big part of his health out by doing a dropping attack on him, and that serves as a tutorial for that.
But. Oh, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Asylum?
Yeah. So in the tutorial.
Oh, yes. Okay. In the asylum. Okay, I get where you...
Not going back to the asylum where it's the same boss, but
I've said too much.
So it has come to this.
But anyway, so I got past that one, and then I talked to a guy and he told me to ring two bells, and I remember you guys talking about that. So it's all good to do that next in the game. So.
Yeah.
And I love how completely just jaded that initial quest giver, if you can call it that, is.
The crestfallen warrior? Him?
Yeah, he's so done with it. He's like, you're the 57th undead chosen one that I've talked to today. What the hell, man?
And I like how his entire premise is, yeah, the dude who told you to do that thing, he lied to you. Instead of being just one bell, it's two bells, and have fun. Fuck you.
Yeah.
And his quest gets funnier as he goes along, because for as hopeless as he is,
so it is the level.
We just kind of infer things about games and then cut ourselves short.
I would feel bad if I ruined it, but the conclusion of his quest is suitably heartbreaking. So
fair enough.
Yeah. So what do you think of the mechanics of this game, Ben? Like, are you
too early to comment? I want to give it a fair try before I state any opinions on it.
Yeah, the tutorial is kind of bullshit.
That was fine.
And okay, so cool. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, it doesn't put its best foot forward. And like, until, like, you know, if you go back to episode like 89 or whatever of the show, like, of me like talking bullshit about this game. Like, and saying, like, oh man, and I was trying to go with all these skeletons and they were just killing me left and right. And I was like, this is fucking bullshit. And I put it down and, you know, left it forever. And then I looked up a fact or a wiki or something like that. I was saying, don't go towards the skeletons, Cole.
or like I talked about two episodes ago, falling into the exact same pitfall.
Yeah. It was like, oh, wait. Oh, no. This is in my blood now.
See, but I feel like, Now that I've experienced it, everyone that's played the game has experienced that, I would not want them to remove it.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. And
it's almost like a hazing thing.
And, like, you know, in preparation for another project that I'm doing, I'm getting more people turned on to the game, and I've served as their Sherpa through this world. And just kind of like, if I'm fighting a bunch of skeletons getting really pissed off, should I be, no, don't go that way? If I'm fighting a bunch of ghosts and getting really pissed off, no, don't go that way. Go towards the zombies, up towards the aqueduct. That's the way you go.
Yeah. I will call the tutorial bullshit. You know, so there's this kind of hazing, figure out the right path that you can actually survive part to it, which is fine. But in terms of actually teaching you the controls and the move sets for your weapons, we hung out in person earlier this week, and we had Dark Souls going, and my character was up, and I had a weapon that I think Cole hadn't really used before, and so he's like, "What's the rolling attack on it?" And I'm like, "What's a rolling attack?"
The running attack.
And then you asked about the running attack, and I'm like, "What's a running attack?"
See, I'm so, not sure how I learned that.
I didn't until it was inadvertently revealed to me, which has been hugely helpful, especially in finally defeating the boss that I was struggling with so much. I finally got through earlier today.
Oh, great. Cool.
Yes. Awesome. I have not explored past that, but I finally got through it.
Huh, cool.
But it just... I think from a lore perspective and from an atmosphere perspective, it is awesome that there is so much that the game does not shove in your face, and so much of the game just kind of puts there and you see it or you don't. It should not be that way with the controls.
It's the it's the Super Mario Brothers 3 white block problem. You know, where it's kind of like, oh, if you crouch on a white block for so-and-so seconds, you fall into the background. It can run to the end of the level and warp to the, you know, whatever, you know, area you want to. But it doesn't tell you that. And a lot of stuff in Dark Souls is like that. And it feels really good when you find it out. You know, by hook or by crook or by wiki.
You can't do that with pretty basic mechanics.
Yeah, like, you didn't know that you could run, and that kind of stuff.
Did I just miss that, or I don't think it ever tells you that you can't?
I think it's in there, but it's in the tutorial, which I've already established is bullshit.
Yeah.
So
the stats are pretty bad for that.
The stats are pretty bad. And
weight.
Yes. Like, so if you don't know that, like, resistance is a bullshit stat for any build that you're trying to make, you could put a bunch of like points into that and not know it. Whereas, like, you might not know that endurance is the best stat in the game, and you can put however much into that and not feel bad about it.
Well, you know? as long as it's less than 30.
Less than 40. But
less than 40.
Yes. But that gets into like really weird territory. And that's like high level stuff. And the covenants, there's just a lot of stuff that the game doesn't communicate to you. And like either if you find that out for yourself, which is incredibly unlikely, or if you talk to somebody who knows about it and says like, oh yeah, no, don't do that. Or, oh yeah, do that. It benefits you. And I am convinced that that is a portion of the game. So Ben, I guess what I'm trying to say to you is don't be afraid to seek help in this game because it will greatly increase your enjoyment of it.
I'm really stubborn, so.
That's fine. That's fine. It'll break you.
I was going to say, I had resolved not to look at a wiki, before beating the game at least once. And then I looked at a wiki today.
And then I called you because you were asking about something or other. I was like, okay, yeah. Here is every single covenant in the game. Here are the weapons that you want to use. Here's how weapon scaling works. Here's this kind of stuff.
It's like, no, dude, seriously, you kind of need to know these things.
You kind of need to like be willing to look the stuff up.
Although I have to say, that's probably the one thing in the game that I don't think is well done, is weapon scaling.
I think that like once you learn that the Drake sword isn't the best, and that the lightning spear isn't the best, and that those letters on any given stat mean anything, it makes you better. Because like those crutch weapons that everybody finds and then uses, they end up working for you. But if you figure out that like those mean something, it makes you even more potent because there's nothing to lose in that regard, and you can get through a lot of this game with sheer tenacity or skill. Those kind of things benefit you in high level play and also in PvP or co-op. You know,
well, I mean more the fact that like most of the stats don't mean anything.
I guess so. Like there are four stats that mean a lot for your damage, and most of those are ones that, given your build and any knowledge of role playing game conventions, you would be able to know what to put in. You know, you would know that you would like, oh, I'm going to focus on strength or dexterity or faith or intelligence.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying, you know, again, it's been a while since I've set up a character. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff where upping dexterity has no bearing on you playing with a play style that people would generally consider dexterous.
It kind of does, though, because there are weapons that have movesets that are linked entirely to dexterity, where you would have access to them if you met their minimum requirements. But the difference between strength and dexterity is strength you hit once for a lot of damage, or dexterity you hit a lot of times for a little damage each time. But you can actually stack a bunch of enchantments on top of that and do a lot more damage. So it like benefits your discipline in order to like, I'm going to go for dexterity, which seems to offer less right now, but if I upgrade stuff or learn how to actually play it, then I'll be fine. Does that make sense?
Two thoughts for you on Dark Souls. One, for us just spending a half hour, you know, blasting all the opaque or broken parts of it. This is a freaking awesome game, and you should play it. And then two, this is why it needs its own show.
Yeah. So let's – thank you, Dennis, because I get lost.
Oh, my God. I'm actually incredibly – now that I've started playing Dark Souls, I'm incredibly excited for the Bonfireside Chats. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
There's a lot of meat there. There definitely is. So, Ben, do you have any final comments as you kind of go into the game proper?
Yeah, just to defend myself, I put a picture in the conversation, and that was pretty much all I was staring at the entire battle, or just by how I was trying to beat the first boss.
Let me see here. Yeah, he did
that demon ass.
He do kind of got that that demon butt.
Yeah. Just to try and defend myself, I don't want to sound like
you're fixated. No, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
I'm not fixated on demon butts, I swear.
Does this go in the show notes? I think yes.
And I make a note after Hotline Miami trailer. Hotline Miami trailer. Demon butts.
Anyway. Yeah, so, I mean, I'll keep playing it. I will have my attention diverted in the next week or two coming up, so I don't know how much I'll get to it. But
real life intersects, as it does.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But I'll keep you guys updated.
So. Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Dennis or David, what up?
I can hit on. I mean, we kind of already did Dark Souls, which I've definitely been playing. So I'll cross that off. I've got two though that I've been playing that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Right. I will take the silence as acquiescence. Thing. Yeah. the first one, and I've mentioned it before, but I beat Double Dragon Neon, which is like a humorous kind of side-scrolling beat 'em up game. And it is freaking amazing. And it has a song during the credits, much like Portal, that is probably as good as the Portal song, just in terms of being, I know it's high praise, but in terms of being just one, the perfect cap to end the game, make you feel like you've really accomplished something. And then two, just being incredibly funny, and three, being very much in line with the tone of the rest of the game and really putting a kind of a nice big exclamation point at the end of the game. It was perfect. So I don't know if any of you have this game or ever plan to play the game, but I would at least look up the ending song to enjoy.
Yeah. What's the name of the song again?
Double Dragon Neon is the name of the game. I don't know that this song has a title. Let me see if you Google Double Dragon Neon and credits song or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
You'll probably get it, but it made me, yeah, I laughed through the entire thing, and it makes reference to all the bosses that you fought and everything like that. Which was nice, especially if you've played the game, but, it really made me laugh, and that was just a delightful game that I was not expecting to enjoy as much as I did. So high recommendation there for Double Dragon Neon.
Yeah.
Good times. And free if you have a PlayStation Plus, so get on that. The other thing I've been playing is Little Big Planet 2, that game that Cole keeps on saying he's going to play at some point.
he smiles sheepishly.
Yeah. I was just looking for a co-op game to play with my wife, and we hadn't tried that one for a while. I think she had tried it she tried the first one a long time ago and decided she didn't like it, so she had never tried the second one. And we started playing it just because we had run through everything else. And my gosh, that game is so much fun playing co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a playground. Like, you know, I know we talk about sandbox games, but really – I would put Little Big Planet into that category from the sheer fact of we probably spent a half hour on one screen of a level playing around with the like rope swinging physics, just having fun and messing around and seeing if we could, you know, get to certain heights and stuff like that. And, you know, it was completely detached from any sort of true objective in the game, but it was just this fun sandbox of physics and objects and ways to make the two interact. That is just a ton of fun. So, and it was especially a lot of fun with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Sorry, were you playing in the editor?
No, we were playing in the story mode.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it was just like the tutorial area that, you know, kind of teaches you how to use the grappling hook of the game.
Okay.
And I think we've established on this show that grappling hook equals automatic awesome for any game.
Depends. Depends.
Correctly implemented grappling hook.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a ton of fun. And yeah, I haven't even cracked open the editor again, which I'm sure will happen at some point when I have lots and lots of time to lose. Which now that I'm coming, this is my last day of Christmas vacation, so it's bittersweet for me. I'm going back to work tomorrow and won't have nearly the time to blow on video games that I've had over the past couple of weeks. Single tier.
These things happen.
Yeah. But it's it kind of raised one last thought as I was playing. So yeah, I've been enjoying Little Big Planet a bunch, and having a lot of fun with the co-op, which for all that I've played those games, I've never really played them co-op with any consistency. So it's kind of fun to actually go through the story mode with that and seeing there are like almost every level has puzzles and areas that are specifically multiplayer, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But you know, the bubbles, the prize bubbles that you get throughout the level unlock, textures and items and all sorts of different stuff for you to use in create mode, which is nice. It makes the rewards that you get very meaningful, but at the same time, you feel like you're painting without a full palette of colors unless you've 100% of the story mode, which is nearly impossible. So there's this weird, like, it's cool that they did that, but I also really don't like that they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's one of those things like where like any game where it's kind of like unlock this multiplayer map by playing single player or unlock this character in multiplayer by playing single player. Mm-hmm. Putting that requirement onto you being able to find somebody to play, finding somebody to be able to play single player with you. Mm-hmm. Kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Wait, you play single player with people?
That's what co-op is, right?
Yes. Okay. I understand now.
Single player meaning
I was having a moment.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, and it's even like I said, I'm doing it co-op, which opens up a lot, but for every two player area that, you know, I can now access, there's a three or a four player area that's still off limits, which is really frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially because it's holding back create content from me. So.
Yeah.
Release the content.
and I believe that's not the only game that you're playing right now that's doing that as well.
I
think I know what he's referring to, but I want to know if you can deduce it.
I'm not playing any free-to-play. I'm playing a bunch of small Steam games that aren't necessarily...
Waggly.
That's right, I forgot about that. yeah, WarioWare. We party game that locks the party aspect behind a single-player campaign.
The lamest thing in the world. Yeah.
It's the worst. It was a lot. I mean, we just kind of played. We took turns at the single player again when everyone was hanging out at my place, which was a good time. WarioWare is a very wacky Wii game, yeah, which I don't know if there's any other kind, but it's like a bunch of 5-second micro games strung together.
In fact, the original WarioWare for Game Boy Advance was WarioWare Games Incorporated micro games.
Games. Which is like a mini game, only micro.
Yes.
Yeah. In case you missed that, I'm taking a micro because it is smaller than mini.
Yeah.
It is very much like making you wait in line outside of a club, then making you play the single player before you can play the multiplayer.
Yeah, it's very true. It's like take this personality test before you can get into our cult.
That's a Silent Hill Shattered Memories, I guess.
it's kind of crazy because like you had like from what I remember, like when I first got this game, like way back, in order to get the multiplayer mode, which is, you know, various rules assigned to streams of micro games, as it were, you have to beat the game.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
How do you
it's a
mini game?
You get through all of the different levels, and they have like really cool like anime cutscenes between them. It has a lot of personality, but again, it's a bummer.
And it's mitigated by the fact that the main, you know, game is all of 20 minutes long. You know, it's I probably played for a half hour collectively before we played. We probably played it for a half hour, and there's probably a half hour left to go. So it's an hour and a half of time. For something that'll be a great party game. But still, yeah, that makes no sense that you would lock it behind that sort of requirement.
Yeah. Because it's a delightful game, especially if you have people there to enjoy the absurdity with you.
Yeah.
Yes. Just don't hide your light under a bushel, fellas. And by fellas, I mean everybody.
Don't hide your light under a bushel unless that is the particular mini game you're playing.
Exactly. Unless you can put a bushel over some light.
they still do the mini games still have the one word
imperative?
That, I think that is my favorite part. You talk about games having verbs.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets great when it says something like pick and there's a nose on the screen. It's like, well, right.
that's clear, I guess.
to be entirely clear, because WarioWare at this point is a storied franchise, we are referring to WarioWare Smooth Moves for the Wii. Yes.
Yep. And you made me run through all the games that I really have been playing this week, and I just wanted to call out one other, because I've been playing a slew of Steam games. I got a Mac for Christmas, and that is a computer with a functioning video card. So that's opened up a whole world of Steam games to me. Uh-huh. But the one that I wanted to talk about was Bit Trip Runner.
Ah, oh, it's good.
It's incredibly simple. It's like, you know, press spacebar to jump over the hurdles and repeat. But it's the best example of, I think I'm saying this right, of abnegation in gaming, where just kind of that flow that you kind of zone out, your eyes kind of go to soft focus, and you're just in the moment. It does that really well because it's a relatively simple game, and it's not hard to play. But it also, the music coordinates with what you're doing in the game. That as you jump, the jump is in time with the music, and as you collect the little gold pieces, that's in time with the music. And then as you get these, like, I guess you'd call them power-up things, they don't really change anything except for the music, but the music like gets more filled out and brighter and more intense as you collect more of these. And so it's just this great feeling of kind of getting into the flow of things as you play, which is really fun. Yeah. So I've probably spent like 4 hours playing what is essentially a little flash jump the hurdle game.
It's a one button game. It's kind of like Cannibal or anything like that, where you
pretty much.
They call it runner, but all you do is jump.
This is true. No, there's running in there. There's also sliding and kicking, but you know that's advanced.
yeah. It's like you said, abnegation. I'm not sure what that word is.
I'm gonna look it up so I can say it right.
But I think what you're referring to is the idea that you can just turn off all of your brain except for the stem, the part that responds to audio and visual stimulus, and press a button whenever you sense danger, and you can succeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So again, it's just worth mentioning because it's the best example of that I've seen.
Yeah.
And that's what I've got.
Neato. David, what up?
Hey, is this on? Okay.
Yes, it is on. We can hear you.
Sorry, I mute it when I'm not talking so that if I'm screwing around. Anyways. Cole gifted me FTL last show, so I've been playing that some, and that's a lot of fun. Although I hate to say that you guys, as members of my crew, only Cole is still with us.
Oh man,
the other two were taken down by giant space spiders.
Oh,
as you do.
Say that again.
I said anything but the space spiders.
every game of FTL eventually turns into that episode of Firefly where Mal is on the ship and dying of oxygen deprivation.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's inevitable.
I have to say, probably the most depressing part of playing this game is the whole time I'm like, wow, this is what the Star Trek MMO could have been.
Except it became awful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it could have been good.
But, yeah.
But no, I actually...
But then it was awful.
It's kind of weird. I didn't play till today. You know, it was one of those games I've been, you know, wanting to play for a long time, but just all the reviews of it you know, just made it sound really complicated. And I guess, you know, to be fair, the last roguelike game I played was NetHack.
the most complicated, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, play it, it's just, it's incredibly approachable.
Yeah.
Which, also, you know, the most reviews I've seen, you know, obviously they have the screenshots and stuff, but they really don't do justice to, you know, the pixel art, and it just comes together really well.
The audio and visual presentation is really, really good. The visuals are simple enough that you can kind of survive and hang, you know, and just kind of like understand and react to things visually. But there's enough depth to it that different kinds of ships and different weapons function in a different way that it's really, really rewarding if you want to dive into it.
Yeah, I've the only weird thing I've been finding that I don't quite get is it doesn't seem to matter how long you stay at a particular location, right?
No, it doesn't.
So usually what happens is I get done with a battle and then I spend like 10 minutes, you know, repairing everything and putting out fires and healing everyone.
That's the right thing to do.
Yeah. I don't know. It just strikes me as odd, but...
You know, roll with it. Yeah. It gives you a breather, whereas in most cases it doesn't give you a breather.
Yeah, come on now. It's not Dark Souls.
It's really good. I'm happy that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, so far so good. Am I correct that kind of border that moves across the sector you're not supposed to come in contact with?
You're not supposed to. I think you can hang in it for a little bit, especially if you're like, if you have to backtrack to get a usable path through to the beacon at the end of any given sector. But just, it gives you like a pretty much guaranteed certainty that the rebel fleet will get you. So whereas most star clusters you go to will give you like the probability of having combat, that assures that you have combat.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you hang out there, eventually you're going to lose all of your resources.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. What else?
Again, in order to make my previous comments, you know, completely hypocritical, I picked up Dead Island on the cheap from Steam.
That's
cheap. How cheap is on the cheap?
Actually, I'm a little. I was a little bit pissed. I got it for $10, 50% off, and then like the next day, it was 75% off.
Yeah.
So, is it they gave you $10 to play the game, or
no? Oh. No, I gave them $10
for the privilege.
For the privilege to play the game,
as you do. That's the four player co-op roguelike kind of game with the multiplayer hubs and the pudding pops.
Oh, it's more or less Far Cry with zombies.
Yeah.
Does it look as good as Far Cry?
I would say it's very good.
Cool.
Yeah, my theory is, you know, Dead Island is Far Cry with zombies, and Far Cry is Skyrim or whatever with guns. Therefore, by the transitive property of analogies, the game is Skyrim with zombies. But the big thing with it is it's the only zombie game I've played where the zombies actually feel like zombies.
Okay.
So,
qualify that.
Well, you know, in Left 4 Dead, you know, you have all the infected running around, but they're not really a threat. You know, you can slaughter, you know, hundreds of them. And, you know, it's not till you get to the special infected that they're really much of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, similarly, Dead Rising is, you know, a little bit better, but I mean, still the zombies aren't that threatening. Whereas in Dead Island, you generally only fight like at most 5 zombies at a time, but they're all a threat to you.
Okay.
You have an endurance system. Sort of like Dark Souls, that, you know, is used up whenever you sprint, jump, or swing. And if you deplete your endurance, obviously you can't fight, and any hits will automatically knock you down.
Okay.
So you have to be really, really careful.
You have to be judicious with how you kill the zombies.
Exactly, exactly. The other thing is, you know, it's the game's really well presented, you know, very, very gory. Lots of, you know, breaking zombie heads, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then each zombie has its distinct vocalizations it makes.
Okay.
So it's a lot of the game is, you know, listening, and so that you can get an early warning of what zombie is about to attack you.
So are there like different classes of zombies essentially, or?
Yeah, it does the Left 4 Dead thing where it has your standard zombies that are like the slow moving, you know, old school zombies, but then there's also, you know, there's the exploding zombie and the super strong zombie and the fast zombie and stuff like that.
Okay. Do they try and rationalize those at all, or is it just kind of like Left 4 Dead where it's like that's what their thing is?
Yeah, not really. That's one of the things I don't like. Luckily, most of them, both the fast one and the stronger one, look more or less like the regular zombie, so it's not as blatantly weird. Basically, their explanation is that it's a mutation of like the cannibalism virus that causes people to turn to zombies for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really all the explanation they give.
Right.
But the only weird thing, though, is the game has no storyline, really.
No. And that's a problem with any game that is designed explicitly around multiplayer. So are you bringing other people into your game to kind of like compensate for that? Or are you kind of going it alone?
I'm doing it. Usually in co-op games, the first time through, I'll go it alone. And that, it's weird because it's not, when I say that, it's weird because, you know, the game has a very, you know, very good atmosphere. The, you know, the characters are, well, by which I mean the zombies are very compelling. You know, everything looks good. The voice acting's pretty good. You know, it has all the things that generally make a story successful. There's just no story. And the problem is it makes all those other things not work as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like they need a backdrop to reflect those things off of.
Right. Except, like, a backdrop aside from, like, oh boy, this is an island resort. Oh, there's some weird stuff underneath it. Everybody's dead. Oh, this woman's crying.
Right. Like, well, and it's, yeah, and it's just like, you know, like, none of the NPCs that, you know, die or don't die, you know, none of them really have personalities, or like, you know, one of the things I really liked in Dead Rising was all the missions to save survivors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where, you know, you'd go out and, you know, generally you'd find the survivor and then they'd have some task they wanted you to do and then they'd come back with you and you'd save them. Mm-hmm. And this one, you'll go out, you'll find the survivor, they'll have some task for you, and then you'll just leave them there. So, like, one of them, you know, there's a car crash and you, like, in the middle of the jungle and you rescue the people from the car crash, you know, like, you know, pull them out of the wreckage and then just leave them standing there in the middle of the jungle.
BRB, you guys will be fun.
You know,
you good, right, dog?
Oh, man.
Well, the other thing is they don't do any set pieces, really, or any scripting. Right. Which, you know, for example, one of the missions, you have to restart all these, like, servers at these computer terminals. And the guy who gives you the mission is, you know, hey, watch your back out there. You know, you never know what's out there. And then you do the mission and absolutely nothing tries to ambush or sneak up on you.
That could be seen as a subversion of, you know, your expectations, right?
Well, except that it's the entire thing is like that. You know, there's never been...
there are no zombies in the game ever.
Well, no.
This is a bunk-ass game, dude.
I've never seen a zombie, you know, kick down a door or...
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's weird.
I guess Dead Island was kind of like the way that the use Dead and Swinger sort of island.
David, do you have any final stuff to say about Dead Island?
Good game.
Rules.
Multiplayer.
So now it's time for the multiplayer, where we reach out to you with a topic of the week to discuss. And this week's topic, if I can pull it up so crassly... let's look here. I went and done closed it. Oh, well. No, it's what is your gaming resolution for 2013? And no, 1920 by 1080 does not count, you smartass, I believe. Things that you would like to see happen between now and the end of this year of our Lord, 2013. So, anyway...
Between this and the light under the bushel, this podcast has become very religious.
It has. Hey, Ben, tell us what Nick says.
Okay. Nick says, finish some of the games from 2011 I still haven't started.
Yep.
Womp, womp. Dude's competing with you for clogging, Cole.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things. My New Year celebration last year was me alone, like, sorting all my games to be, like, an autobiographical artist. Like, I'm going to do it, guys. I'm going to do it. And then I didn't do it.
And then Steam happened.
And then everything happened. Turns out there are a lot of games that continue to be released. So,
you think they would stop doing that?
Take a year off.
Out of courtesy.
Just stop that. Stop doing that thing where you make things.
The level becomes 5 minutes long.
Yes. What you been playing? Nothing. Okay. Cool.
See you next week.
David, what's Chad say?
Instead of creating yet another character in Dark Souls, I'll finally complete one playthrough. Praise the sun.
Indeed, brother.
I cannot do that voice justice, by the way.
You can't cooperate drollily?
Oh. Wait, what's that guy? Anyway, I'm sorry.
Solaire. So it's the Solaire of Astora.
I'm cutting off now before we fall into more
of discussion.
I appreciate your wisdom in that regard. What else does Chad say?
And second, I will play and complete... Ico, Shadow of the Colossus, and Journey.
Those are recommendable, laudable goals.
Good games.
No, we support you, Chad.
Yeah.
And those are increasingly more easy to get a hold of. So go for it.
Do any of us have the HD versions?
I do.
Yes.
Did we play that, Cole, when we beat it like a year or two ago?
No, we played the PS2 version. This was before the HD.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I remembered one of us talking about it, but yeah, it's out there.
Yeah, they're good. The HD versions run well, just like all of the PlayStation 3 is kind of the HD remake system. So go for it.
They have found their cash cow.
Yes, they have. Why make new stuff when you can make old stuff again and again and again? Dennis, say what Joffrey.
It's like one giant escort quest. Am I thinking of the right thing?
Eco's fucking...
Yeah, basically.
Eco's amazing. It's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. But that's the one where you have like the clueless little girl and the shadow people?
Bite your tongue.
No,
you're right. You're right. Okay, yeah.
That's been on my to play list forever. I'm gonna have to
go ahead. It's on sale frequently. You can probably get it on the Rainforest for right cheap. It's good. It's good.
So next up is Geoffrey or Jeffrey, you know, whichever you prefer.
Joffrey.
Joffrey. he says, I'd like to finish some more games in general. I've been playing games for years, but the games that I finish are few and far between. It's not often that I stick through to the end. And the last game I finished was Limbo, and before that it was Mystery Exile. Wow, that is quite the span. He is not kidding. So for the time I spend playing games, I don't have the best track record. Also, as a kid, I didn't have the consoles everybody else had, so I missed out on a lot of the great retro games that there are. I'd like to get into playing these games, or the games I'd have loved years ago, now that they're so easy to come by, and, of course, complete them. And, of course, retro games is in our sweet spot.
Yes.
So there's a great handy little guide there for you if you're serious about getting into those games. Right. But I totally empathize with this because I found myself getting worse and worse at completing the games that I start.
Yeah, and like there has to be a distinction between completing a game and finishing a game, you know?
Yes.
Like I'm done with this game and I've done everything there is in this game. But yeah, when you're leaving loose ends, it gets really, really tough, especially when every purchase is seen as a tacit commitment towards, beating that thing. So.
Yeah. Well, it's also like having watched, you know, the first three episodes of every sitcom that you like, you can have a conversation about them. You know what people are talking about, but you don't really get all the jokes and
yeah. You're building up your building up your vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Carlo Dieron says, most of the game-related resolutions I heard involved playing less of them, which runs counter to everything we've said so far. I would say mine would have to do with, would be to complete Borderlands 2 with my group of friends and complete more quests in Fitocracy, of course. Fitocracy being the fitness-based MMO that is on the web, which looks pretty neat.
That's a thing.
Yeah, check it out. It's pretty cool. But yeah, Carlo, it's funny because like for us, it's weird to say like, yeah, I really need to play less games. Like we're headed in the opposite direction. So you know,
although that would make the podcast, you know, shorter.
Yeah, it would. I think that's why we're headed in the opposite direction. For me, anyway. I'm trapped here. I'm basically handcuffed to this fucking controller. But so you know, a difference in priorities.
This is going to turn into a podcast for people who love the video games.
Exactly. Anyway. Ben, finish us out with Christopher.
Christopher Harrison. It seems one that is shared by most here. A resolve to play, I assume it's through the long list of games I bought on Steam and never even started up. Every Steam sale adds to the list, but my available time never seems to grow to match it. Perhaps I should resolve to stop buying games until the list of shame is reduced.
Then that's not going to happen. You can say it.
Yeah.
You can say everything you want. You can say the sky's green, you know.
I resolve to fly this year.
Unaided human flight. It's going to happen just so long as I stop paying attention to Steam sales. Yeah.
think of the better things you could be doing with your time.
So does anybody here have a 2013 gaming resolution of note?
I don't have a clock, so I have no, I have nothing to lament.
Yeah,
from
you
that.
Live spare. You're good.
Game to game, dude.
Yeah.
Start to finish. Yeah, so I have no, maybe get Mass Effect 3. I need to get on that.
Like for you though, you would have to do the trilogy, so I could see the overhead, the investment being higher than you would expect it to be. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I can't even remember the last time I beat a game. like literally, I think it was Halo 2 maybe.
Yeah. Did you not beat Borderlands?
Oh, I did beat the first Borderlands.
Or not Borderlands 2 though?
No. I think I made it to Sanctuary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's tough. Uh-huh. I mean, it's tough. I mean, that's the stock response, but that's what mine would be, you know, to beat more of the games that I own. But it's hard, especially when games come out so frequently.
I do have to say, Mass Effect, I feel like that is one that I feel like I should play.
It'd be easy for you to fill that gap in, I think, given your PC-centric nature and the fact that you have a PS3. You're pretty much in the same boat as Ben. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, I kind of was thinking about it, and I think I really want to start steering myself towards co-op games and just being intentional about finding and playing the cream of the crop there. I mean, you know, this show relies on the fact that gaming is a, you know, shared experience, that people, you know, have those moments that they all, you know, what'd you do at this point and that sort of thing. And the extent to which that can actually be a shared experience in the moment instead of just kind of sharing about the moment afterwards, I think makes them that much better. So hopefully I'll be finding lots of opportunities to play, you know, cooperative modes and kind of share the experiences live as they happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's too bad that we don't have like a community of people who pay attention to things we say. You are going to be at a sore loss for people to play, you know, games with. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I would say go to Facebook or something, you know, if we had a group that you could go to put out a call for people to play with you, you know.
Yeah. And I think there's a Steam group. There is. Yeah. It hit me up on Steam, by the way. I forget what my username is. I'm in the WAF group. You can find me.
We'll make a level group.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's multiplayer. If you want to continue to participate in these discussions, you can join our Facebook group. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, where you can watch for these things. Also on Twitter, either myself or Dennis will say those things at the end. You can also find that information on our website, which is all well and good.
The end boss.
So yeah, end bosses. We're getting towards later on in the evening, and let us go through and talk about what's been happening over the past little bit or so. Just a little brief bite-sized nuggets of life wisdom that we can drop on people. Anybody want to volunteer? Because otherwise I have one.
I will say that maybe not this week, but I still have a game queued up ready as far as bad video game reviews go.
Oh!
Okay. So I kind of like that idea, actually.
Bad video game reviews?
Yeah, it's the game we played
Forest
before.
For the Trees.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
that game.
Yeah.
So just saying,
do we want to do that instead of an end boss today?
Let's do a couple of rounds of that. Is that cool for everybody? I don't have anything to do tonight. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I can make up an end boss, but we can also, if you got a game ready to go, let's...
All that I'll say is for Christmas, I got the new X-Men Omnibus and the Walking Dead and like, you know, the comic books and stuff. And those are really good. And it's nice. it's a stark contrast between, hey, they made a great game out of The Walking Dead, but they've never made a good X-Men game since the Sega Genesis. so, yeah, bummer.
Hey, what's the Wolverine? The Wolverine game was actually really good. I was surprised by how good it was.
Yeah, I never played it, so.
It was the time with his origin story. I forget what it's called now, but it was actually a really competent, like, you know.
God of War.
Yeah, basically. A competent God of War clone, which is high praise.
Okay, cool. So
do we want to do what we got for Christmas? Is that going to be our end boss?
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. Let's just go through real quick, and then Ben can finish us out with the bonus round. You guys.
I'll do what I got for for Christmas. I got Dark Souls, obviously, and I got a Mac, which opened up just a world of games through Steam because I had previously and gotten through various means several humble indie bundles that I'd never been able to play. So I've got like 15 games now that that are suddenly accessible to me.
I got a new gaming mouse and a gun.
Cool.
All right. I got beer and Dark Souls.
That's a good combination, I would say. Yeah.
Beer and Dark Souls.
Dulls the pain. Bonus round. So, Ben, hit us with the bonus round, the forest for the trees.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, for our dedicated listeners, we've played this once before, but basically I will read a review of a good game, but it's a bad review of a good game, so the quotes that I'm reading are obviously wrong, but from the quotations, they have to guess what game it is that I'm talking about. So I think the way we did it last time was kind of the first person to, we had each person guess and then each person would get a point. Do you guys want to do it like, first person to answer gets a point?
It's up to you. I would say that, it gets a little bit hairy. So the first person to answer correctly gets the point. So if somebody shouts out and they're wrong, you would say no, and then the next person would have a chance to go.
All right. I think we'll do it the way we did it the first time. So the way we'll do it is everybody will get a chance to say an answer. So if you're in last place, you'll go last, and so you might be able to just piggyback off of somebody else's answer. But we'll do it that way, I guess.
Yes.
So we'll do it alphabetical first. So it'll be Dave, Dennis, and Cole, and then we'll do it by golf rules. Whoever has the highest points has to say first and go our way. Go down from there.
Okay.
All right. So we have five quotations and a tiebreaker in case it gets intense. All right. So the first bad video game review. One of the most disturbing things about this bad excuse for a game is that they have nude zombie children that stab you with kitchen knives. What the hell is up with that? David.
Go ahead, David.
Nude zombie children.
Tick-tock, tick-tock.
The only zombie children I can think of would be Bioshock, and I don't remember kitchen knives.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Dennis?
I have to go with Silent Hill.
Damn it!
Cole, what are you going to guess?
I was going to say Silent Hill, actually.
The correct answer is Silent Hill.
Ah, so Dennis gets the...
Well, no. Dennis gets a point and Cole gets a point. That's okay. You can piggyback.
Okay, so they have zombie children in that game?
In the schools, yeah. In the schools.
Yes. Huh.
With kitchen knives.
And why is that made it past part? The censors?
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Earlier time.
So we'll have Dennis go, then Cole go, and then David go for the second round. Okay. So the second quote. Difficulty does not arise through clever design, but by ignoring decades of video game evolution, taking the absolute worst aspects of a variety of genres and throwing them together into one big turd sandwich.
I'm going to guess Dark Souls.
God damn it. Okay. Yeah, Dark Souls. That's what I was going to say, too.
Okay. David?
I'm going to have to go with Dark Souls.
Okay, so that was an obvious quote then, because you guys all got a point for that one.
So that was a wash, okay?
Yeah. Well, because the problem is, That's what everyone who plays Dark Souls thinks at least one point.
Yeah. And then they quickly get won over.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone thinks that at one point, and everyone thinks these developers just must hate me at one point.
And then I must hate myself.
Yeah. So. It's like, you know how there are stages for grieving? Same thing for playing Dark Souls.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. So the third quotation, we'll do the same order then. I think this game is fun for what it's worth, but in terms of innovation, I'd give it a zero. I endured listening to J-pop on Beatmania, so I'm glad they made something worth playing for people in the States.
Oh, that's sound tricky. Shapes.
Okay, cool.
What has J-pop? Let's say Bayonetta.
Okay, David?
Guitar Hero?
David for the win!
Really?
Guitar Hero, yes.
So we are all tied at this point with two more to go.
So 1-1-1, and so now it's back to original order. All right. Okay. So the fourth video game quote. I have attempted to play through this game so many times that I have lost count, with every new attempt hoping to find the rewarding qualities other described, yet which keeps eluding me. I find myself climbing on the horse and riding through a landscape essentially barren of all those factors that make gameplay fun.
Huh.
David.
Shadow of the Colossus?
Yeah, it's okay. Gotta be Shadow of the Colossus.
Cole?
Zelda the Ocarina of Time.
Ooh. A bold choice. Yet wrong.
Goddamn.
You build them up, then you cut them down.
Sorry. That is a good guess, though. Because the Hyrule Field is
pretty barren. As barren as Shadow of the Colossus, but...
Some of the desert's a little bit barren there, yeah. All right. Okay, so the standing now is...
Me last.
3-2, I believe, so right?
What is Shadow?
It was Shadow of the Colossus, yes. And, you know, it's a great game, so yeah. Terrible. All right. Okay, last one up. And this one is sufficiently difficult, in my opinion. So we'll see. All right, so the fifth video game quote. Great graphics... but you have the same boring objectives in each town.
Tick-tock.
I'm going to go with Borderlands. I've got nothing.
Okay.
Could it be SimCity?
Okay. To make it more interesting, you're both wrong. So Cole for a chance.
So you're trying to make this a tie. So you must have a hell of a tiebreaker there. A good game. Each town. See, I would have said Borderlands 2.
Can you give us a genre?
It has a town in each one, and Ben isn't going to give us a genre, I don't think. Let us say... You know what? David said Borderlands. I'm going to say Borderlands 2.
Scrim.
Sorry, Cole. It is not Borderlands 2. If you would have said Borderlands and it was Borderlands 2, I would have probably given it to him. The answer is Assassin's Creed.
Oh.
I don't think about that like having towns. I think about it having town.
And that's Creed. Also kind of a fair assessment.
Great graphics, same boring objectives in each town.
I mean,
all right.
I mean, I love the game, but they've kind of got a point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think me and David are still
tiebreaker round. Yeah. Okay. All right. So the tiebreaker.
Okay.
The last video game review quote. When I first saw this in the store and fired it up, I thought it was some sort of science game, the kind where kids would play a cute character and learn about gravity, friction, temperature, whatever. Actually, it's the complete opposite of a science game. It teaches kids not to explore. Exploring is not worth the risk because likely you'll wind up getting electrocuted and having to start the stupid maze all over from the beginning. David, I believe you're first.
I've got mine ready to go.
David, you there?
Yeah, sorry. I've got go with Portal for gratuitous references to science.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Portal's spiritual successor, Quantum Conundrum.
Okay. Cole, you want to jump in this? Do you got a guess?
So we're both wrong.
let's go with this. We'll make this a 2-point question. Cole, you can steal the win for this one.
Oh, I feel man. Like
this would also be an excellent description of Dark Souls. Teaches you that sometimes exploring is a bad idea.
That's okay. So the science part. See, I didn't expect. I was just laughing because of how long it took to answer. So I didn't have any points to offer in that regards. I would say Half-Life or Half-Life 2. Just you know, just like that level there.
That's a good one. That's a good guess. you guys overlooked the line, the kind where kids would play a cute character. The answer was Little Big Planet.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I was just playing Little Big Planet Electricity Level 2. Literally, 5 minutes before we started the show, I was dodging electricity in Little Big Planet.
So we leave this bonus round with David and Dennis in an eternal duel for supremacy.
For bad video games reviews.
good video games, bad reviews.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that game.
So, you ever want to laugh? Look up, I believe it's Banana Slicer on Amazon. Read the reviews.
Okay. Is this like the whole demon anus thing? Am I going to see things that I don't want to see?
You're welcome, by the way.
No, 5 stars. No more winning for you, Mr. Banana. For decades, I've been trying to come up with an ideal way to slice a banana. Use a nice knife, they say. Well, my pro officer won't allow me to be around knives. Shoot it with a gun. Background check. Hello? I resort to carefully is attempting to slice those bananas with my bare hands. 99.9% of the time, I'd get so frustrated, I'd just end up squishing the fruit in my hands and throwing it against the wall in anger. Then, after a fit of banana-induced rage, my patrol officer introduced me to this kitchen marvel, and my life was changed.
I like how the caption for the second review is "Saved my marriage."
What can I say about the 571B banana slicer that hasn't already been said about the wheel, penicillin, or the iPhone? This is one of the greatest inventions of all times. My husband and I would argue constantly over who had to cut the day's banana slices. It's one of those chores no one wants to do. You know, the old, I spent the entire day rearing our children. Maybe you can pitch in a little and cut these bananas. And of course, you think I have the energy to slave over your damn bananas? I worked a 12-hour shift just to come home to this? These are the things that can destroy an entire relationship. It's got to the point where our children would sense the tension. The minute I heard our 6-year-old girl in her bedroom reenacting their... reenacting our daily banana fight with her Barbie dolls, I knew we had to make a change. That's when I found the 571B banana slicer. Our marriage has never been healthier, and we've even incorporated it into our lovemaking. Thanks, 571B banana slicer. That's by Mrs. Toledo.
And remember, you can buy it through duckfeed.tv.
Yes, you can.
You can save your marriage, too.
This is amazing.
Thank you, David. That brought joy to my life. So, anyway... For the credits, there's a ton of stuff you can do. Once again, we remain on the new and noteworthy section at the front page of Games and Hobbies. So thank you so much for everybody who is paying attention and subscribing and all of those kind of things. As Ben said when we were talking about the banana slicer, you can use our tip jar link, that is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. and buy any number of banana slicers, none of which have sentimental value to me, from Amazon at no cost to you, or nor extra cost, rather. But we get a kickback, which helps us run the network at not a loss, which is great. If you are an iTunes kind of person and you want to keep us new and noteworthy or keep us on what's hot, you can leave us a rating or review. And most of all, you can continue listening. Turn on some friends if you are a member of any kind of like online community or forums or things like that. You can tell people about us and spread our listenership, which definitely does help out. And if you are a fan of our show, you might check out other stuff on the network, including Those Damn Ross Kids, The Pitch, Watch Out for Fireballs, or our new show, Bonfireside Chat, which, as we mentioned before, is where most of the Dark Souls stuff is going to be happening from now on.
We're registered at Babies R Us.
So anyway, if you want to follow us on Twitter, and this will also serve as our outro for us, I am Cole Ross, and I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at D Furia.
David Mysmith at MoneySmith777.
And Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
And Merkel, you are like overdue for a tweet, aren't
you? Yeah, I was just looking this up. You, actually, no, you're not.
Oh, is there anyone out there?
Yeah, as
like
of the...
a ship at night, my tweet flew under the radar.
On the 13th of December, 2 weeks ago, wow, Ben Merkel says, "I'd like to tell you my thoughts on abstinence, but I'm waiting for the right time." Bravo, sir. Bravo. So for the level, we would all like to thank you for listening, wish you a happy new year, and encourage you to continue listening. So,
and good luck slicing your bananas.
Yeah, you need help.
Oh, dude, I am tweeting this and Facebooking this and everything this. Oh, my God.
I like the military endorsement one.
I didn't see that.
How'd you actually... someone actually posted on Facebook, although there's several articles online that have lists of some of the best.
Says one reviewer, found the secret. While traveling to Marrakesh, I was surprised to be served perfectly sliced bananas. I asked my host how he managed such perfection. His response was only an enigmatic smile. Years later, while I was researching the secrets of the Mayan ruins near Chichen Itza, I came upon a village that had perfectly sliced bananas. I asked the villagers through my translator how they managed such perfection in their bananas. They told the translator something. His eyes widened to small points. He fainted and never recovered consciousness before he died in agony 6 years later. Undeterred, I continued my investigation to find the perfect banana slices. I heard rumors of a group of monks on the northern coast of France near Normandy that could slice bananas perfectly. They were no help at all. They had a vow of silence and couldn't get a word out of them. Skipping forward 23 years and 7 mysterious deaths later, I have found the secret, the 571B banana slicer. No banana is safe. Now, when someone asks me whether I have a banana slicer in my pocket or am I just happy to see them, I can emphatically say yes.
Oh, my God.
All right. I love for the uranium ore entry in Amazon. I think my favorite view is 5 stars. So glad I don't have to buy this from Libyans in parking lots at the mall anymore.
Twin pines or lone pine?
What?
Yeah.
Five That's stars. 5 stars by S. Gilbertson. No instructions were included with this product. I really tried to figure it out, but alas, it was just too complicated. I had to return the slicer to Amazon. It was a disappointment from which I will not soon recover. That review is entitled "Just Too Complicated."
No, I like the one of the one star reviews says no good. While this does okay with bananas, at least the ones that are still firm, I was extremely disappointed to discover that it does not work with oranges.
So I'm going to be reading these for the next hour.
Yeah.
There's 131 pages of these.
Yeah. Yeah. 1,034 reviews. Ooh, canned unicorn meat.
Oh my God.
I hate bananas, but I almost want to order one.
So you can leave a review?
Yeah. See, I wonder, does Amazon do any policing of any of this?
Clearly not.
I want to see what the first review is. Wait a minute. 131.
Who's the original reviewer?
Okay. The original reviewer. May 19th, 2007. Five-star review by Molly entitled Banana Technology Breakthrough. Oh, man, we're not recording anymore. Fuck.
No,
we're recording. We're good. Okay, cool. This rapidly became my favorite specialty kitchen gadget. It slices an entire banana in just seconds without getting banana goo on your fingers and makes perfectly even slices. They're great for cereal, fruit salad, or a quick snack, or throwing into the freezer for smoothies. It's large enough to accommodate any banana. It's easy to clean and stores neatly behind our banana hanger.
even though it's completely serious, it's completely hilarious.
I'm gonna have a panic attack. No, that's not the review. That's just me.
I imagine that's whoever invented the 571B banana slicer.
Our household always has bananas. Many usually went to waste on a weekly basis, but with this fun slicer, we've dramatically increased our banana utilization. Because humankind, at no point in history, bananas were considered deadly poison until we had the proper plastic kitchen instrument by which to slice. Bananas are so tough and difficult and hard that when... I'm going to cry.
Best part, though, is this is probably made whatever company owns this so much money.
I just want to know what the 571A banana slicer was like.
Oh, it was shit. Caught fire.
Terrible.
It burned down at least 7 houses. It poisoned children.
It was like the cornballer.
How do you hold it that it gets accidentally set off? I'm trying to envision
it.
Well,
it is a hotel bell is what it is. Like, you know, where you walk up and you hit the bell.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to check in today, please. And it unscrews at the top.
Uh-huh.
And I unscrew it and I keep it unscrewed so that way I can play with it, you know, in my idle times because I need to do something with my hands or else, you know. That way if, you know, I need to make sure that something is really, really funny before I hit it. So.